Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you from the team behind Cycling Plus, MBUK and BikeRadar.com.
Hi, and welcome to the latest instalment of Bike Radar Meets. I'm Warren Roster, I'm the Senior Technical Editor for all things road here at Bike Radar, and today I'm meeting with two of SRAM's talented tech team behind Wireless Shifting on the dawn of the launch of their most affordable version of ETAP, Axis, yet. So with no further ado, let's get into things with JP McCarthy and Paul Cantor. Hi, guys. If you'd be so kind to give the listeners a quick introduction to your good selves, and then we can get on to the meaty stuff.
All right. I'm JP McCarthy, calling in from Chicago. I'm a longtime SRAM employee and currently a product manager in the road category.
Awesome. Thanks, JP. I'm Paul Cantor. I'm based out in Colorado. I'm the director of road at SRAM. I get to work with Brad, JP, Dan, and a broader team of awesome SRAMies that help put everything together.
Right. Thanks, guys. So I guess we should take things right back to basics, just in case anyone listening isn't aware of what we're talking about when it comes to ETAP and Axis. So maybe, JP, if you could give us a quick overview of what the system is and in your opinion, what the advantages it brings.
Yeah. Rival Axis is a new offer that delivers virtually the same ride experience as our more expensive Red and Force Axis group sets. So super wide, capable gearing in a number of options. It's wireless shifting. So with ETAP, ETAP shift logic, so a simple, easy way to shift. It's got a power meter option, which is something new. And if you have an integrated power meter in bikes or groups of this price range. And, you know, this being an Axis group set, it's Bluetooth and Ant Plus enabled right out of the box so that a rider can take advantage of all that electronics might offer.
Right. So I guess if we step away from all the tech side of things for the moment, it seems to me that, you know, you launched the original Red ETAP back in 2015, and then Red Axis followed, you know, just 4 years later in 2019. You seem to be pushing on quicker than ever down this kind of electronic route. When did it become such a conscious decision to go all in on the road, so to speak? I guess that's one for Paul.
Of course, yes. You know, it's sort of evolved, Warren. I think we, as a lot of people in the industry know, we were late to the electronic party. maybe in a little bit of denial about that. And then we sort of converted to being all in. I don't know that we've abandoned mechanical. What we do see, though, is the benefits of electronic serve, you know, this sort of middle part of the market even better than they do the pros, you know, because it just, man, those motors and everything, all the technology that's in the system just makes it shift the same every single time with a lot less maintenance. And those are really appealing benefits. So it sort of evolved over time. And as we've been able to improve our cost structure and learn more about the system, we're able to offer it, you know, in a more competitive price point. And we're excited to be the first company to offer electronic drivetrain for road bikes at this level of bicycle, where we've really come from behind to be the last to embrace electronic. And now we're the first to bring it to the middle of the market. So we're kind of proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I think, you know, I think I might have mentioned it to you guys before. I mean, I've certainly mentioned it to SRAM Europe guys, is that when it comes to that kind of electronic drivetrain thing, obviously it's always going to be served at the high end of the market first, and it's going to go to the pros first. But right from the inception, right from original ETAP, which I'm still running on my, you know, my personal best bike, to me, it's a group that favors almost that kind of serious cyclist, but maybe not long-term cyclist. So somebody who hasn't, you know, got to grips with the full mechanics of a mechanical group set and making all those tweaks and making all those adjustments. Because if I take, you know, case in point, my giant TCR with its original red ETAP still on it, I mean, I've done 10,000 miles on that bike and I've never touched the gears. I've never had to. You know, I clean the chain, I keep it, you know, I keep it clean and I keep it lubed and I make sure the batteries are charged, and I've never actually had to do anything more to it. And I'm more than comfortable with, you know, adjusting mechanical gearing, but I just think, my God, that is what you want if you're the sort of person that's a bit nervous of, you know, fettling and fiddling with your bike and trying to make an adjustment to that sort of thing. And I think, you know, we can all get completely ingrained in this because we're so ingrained in what we do that we kind of forget about those people that say, oh my God, my gears are out of whack. What do I do? And you go, well, you just turn that a quarter of a turn, you'll be fine. Exactly. And people go, what are you talking about? I don't know what you mean. And the electronic, you know, the advantage of electronics is to take all of that away. So I think hitting that middle ground in the market is what I've always hoped that electronic would do. You know, I don't know what you think, JP, on that side of things.
Yeah, you know, Red and Force have really energized the very top of the market. And let's face it, that is the pinnacle of the market. Those are expensive bikes. So, you know, many of the riders who would benefit most from the advantages of wireless shifting and, you know, which with lower maintenance and ETAP shift logic, which is so simple and intuitive, you know, many of the riders who might benefit most from those things haven't experienced it yet. So it's super gratifying to be able to, you know, offer a group that is available to that many more riders. Even mid-market, maybe even a little highfalutin, these are still relatively expensive bikes. But those bikes today are generally equipped with mechanical shifting, which is adequate, right? It's got decent gears and it's got an adequate mechanical mechanical linkage between controls and derailleurs. That requires more maintenance than a wireless electronic system. So we're super excited to, you know, that it's available to more riders now.
I mean, is you know, another part of Axis, I think offers a, you know, plenty of appeal to riders out there, is that it kind of feels like it's now, if you know what I mean. And that's all down to that connectivity that you bring, you know, you bring to these systems straight out of the box. You know, you can download SRAM's free Axis app. You can immediately connect straight up with your bike. You can identify every single component. You can connect to your Garmin head unit and have all those metrics on display, which is great. You know, how much of a decision with Axis and now bringing it to Rival was it that you wanted to make this group kind of bring it into the digital world, like pretty much everything else that we have in our lives now?
Yeah, I just think it was time. I think, like you said, it's now. People are so comfortable with charging things, electronic. We think any convenient electronic device in our life is wireless or more and more wireless. And we had the right sort of ecosystem to expand on that. So, it's the right time. And then you throw in the benefits of where bicycles and cycling is falling in the middle of this pandemic. And we're, you know, it's just all, that's just super lucky. The pandemic's horrible, of course, but where bicycles are landing and people's interest in getting onto bikes. So it's a really good convergence of timing and product. And yeah, I think the features and benefits that we've layered into Access, the trick for JP was really deciding what to cut out of Rival so that we could hit the right price targets, but what to keep in order to maintain its personality, its framness, Access, you know, and its value. And I think JP and the team have done a great job of hitting that balance there. And, you know, again, we had the opportunity to sit back and look at what our competitors were doing with electronic components and what people wanted from connectivity, and then offer it, you know, in these new packages. It's really been a fun journey. I mean, I don't know where it'll go. You know, people go, well, how far down is this going to go? Right now, it's hard to tell. You know, there's cost constraints, there's capacity constraints in the channel as well. So, but I think this is a great spot for achieving Rival at this price point. And I think it's a sort of milestone for bikes around the Rival price point going forward will need to be electronic, hydraulic brakes and of this performance.
You know, to just sort of, you know, not to labor the point, but just to sort of extend that further, you know, that the Access system is really only, as JP and yourself both said, that, you know, they were only really ever available on high-end bikes. You know, Force is high-end, you know, and you move up to Red, and that's super bikes, that's pro level kind of money, no matter what, you know, no matter which brand or whatever you're looking at. So JP, what have you had to change to bring all this tech down to mechanical group set money?
Well, there's material differences. So aluminum crank as opposed to a carbon crank, aluminum brake lever blades as opposed to carbon composite. As far as features are concerned, very little. You know, the controls is where the biggest changes are in features that Red and Force have reach adjust as well as pad contact adjust. Rival lacks pad contact adjust. It still has reach adjust. Red and Force have ports for one or two auxiliary shifters to be plugged into them. Rival has none. Now, but both of those, you know, we took away features, but they actually result in some improvements as well, by eliminating a couple of features, we actually made that hood a little smaller. And it'll be one of the things that people notice first about the Rival group set. I mentioned materials in the crank and the brake lever blade. One other difference is like Red and Force, this derailleur has chain management. So the Rival derailleurs are appropriate for a 1x or a 2x setup. We affect that chain management with Red and Force via a fluid damper that we call the Orbit damper. And in this case with Rival, it's using a spring clutch or friction damper. That's really same sort of device that we use in mountain bike derailleurs. But the derailleur delivers it delivers the same sort of chain management. The weight is a little bit different. So that's, you know, those are the things I can actually think of that anyone would actually notice.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using the group for a while now, and you know, I have noticed that slight difference in shape on the hoods. Not that I ever had a problem with, you know, Force or Red Access. I mean, Force Access I've been using for, you know, 2 years more now on one of my own bikes. and you know, I'm a big fan of it. But just having that smaller, you know, well, less volume, as it were, I think it'll probably appeal to a more, you know, a greater, you know, size of people or whatever. You know, it seems much more female friendly, much more junior friendly, because you've still got the reach adjust there. You know, contact point adjustment is a great thing to have, but I think on, I mean, in fact, I've got two Force Axis bikes. It sounds like I'm showing off now, but the contact point adjustment on those, I think I did it once when I got it, and I've never looked at it, and never needed to look at it since. You know, I just kind of got it. Well, that feels right, but the kind of rival out the box feels fine. You know, it feels great. So, but you know, you talked about these material changes and these differences. So, say we take it in direct comparison to Force. You know, what are we talking at? You know, for the weight weenies out there in grams, what's the difference?
I don't get real weeny on weights myself because I really like riding bike. But yeah, it's on the order of 150 to 200 grams between the difference between a Force Complete Group and a Rival Axis Complete Group. And that is,
so that's
100, it's more like it depends on the specification. 150 on the one by, you know, one by is more like 150 grams, and two by is more like 200 grams delta.
So putting that in context, that's like a half full large water bottle.
I never weigh water bottles. I carry as much water as I think I'll need. I never put it on the scale.
It's kind of like an extra large Gore-Tex shake dry jacket.
Some new kit.
Okay, and then I think the other thing that I think we probably need to go into is the where we're talking about Axis. Axis now seems to me to have become almost like a family. So. It's massively interchangeable. So if you do end up with buying a Rival Axis bike, down the line, the parts are interchangeable with Force, they're interchangeable with Red, you know, and if you've gone down the one by route and you want a little bit more extreme, you can mix with Eagle Axis parts and create a true mullet drivetrain. I mean, was that always a thing that you're creating this almost an Axis ecosystem rather than a big group, as it were, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the most fun things about bikes, particularly drop bar bikes right now, is the emergence of more capable road bikes. And of course, you know, what is more ubiquitously called the gravel bike, whatever that might mean to various parts of the world. But that's really opened up a world of opportunity, and where people are, you know, needing some cross compatibility across components and putting like Eagle on the back of the bike. It is a natural progression. The Axis ecosystems allows us to easily pair all those parts together and really lower the friction of making that work. And just last week, you know, this is obviously a shameless plug for our team members over on the mountain side, but they just rolled out GX Axis, so a lower price point of the mountain bike group. And you can pair that with a rival group and build a lower price point of mullet bike or you know, super capable gravel bike in a one bike configuration. So that was always the goal. And the nice thing about the app and the way the system's built is we can sort of block out certain things that would cause you to have a bad or poor performing experience and just allow the system to do the things that bring the most value to the bike in terms of connecting components and building different things out. And we'll continue to expand that over time. And it keeps us flexible as people want to do different things with their bikes.
I think that knowing you've got an upgrade path that, you know, should you want to, should you want to, I know JP, you're not the weight weenie amongst us or anything, but there are plenty of people out there that would want to go, oh, I'd love to get a carbon crank on there and drop a few grams, or, you know, that's all open to you. That's kind of cool. I think, The only kind of other thing that I think when we're talking Rival, I think needs a little bit of explanation. It's probably a bit on the techie side, so I think this is aimed at you, JP. Is you've introduced this range of wide options, so it would be good if you could just explain to the listeners, you know, kind of as simpler terms as you can, why you saw the need for the wide option and what actually that brings to it.
Well, for our lowest 2x gearing and all of our 1x rival axis gearing, we're using a wider spacing on the crank. And the reason is it's driven by bicycle specifications, which are allowing to accommodate wider tires. So frames are in some cases getting wider chain stays to accept wider tires. And so we're spacing out the crank, and in the 2x case, the front derailleur a little bit further outboard, simply to allow for wider tires. So the rival group uses that wide spacing, as I said, with the lowest 2x gearing, our 4330 crankset, and all of the 1x cranks are spaced out, adding a total of 5 millimeters clearance.
Right, and for that you need special crank, special front mech if it's 2x, and that's all running off your dub bottom bracket platform, yeah.
Correct. The wide 2x crankset requires a wide front derailleur, and to get a little technical on how we executed it, we put it all into the spindle, so that road bikes typically are built upon a nominal 68 millimeter shell. Bottom bracket shell. And in this case, it's built on a nominal 73 millimeter shell. So that crank will fit any typical road frame, or some of the newer frames are actually coming, with a mountain bike spaced bottom bracket shell in order to get the stays out further for maximum tire clearance and short chain stays. So we really just created that opportunity to make a bottom to install this on a nominal 73 shell. Really, for some of the smaller frame builders, those who are are really mobile in the market they can try different specifications. We're finding some OEM bicycle brands are actually going in that direction as well. It allows this drivetrain to fit onto some of the city and urban type bikes that are generally built for a mountain bike crank. This crank will fit on there.
I guess just to dial it back a little bit, all of these axis systems are 12 speed. And when we're talking 12 speed, for you guys moving to 12, it wasn't just a case of adding another sprocket. You kind of changed the game on gearing, as it were. We were talking then about cranks and talking about a 4630 or which seemed alien to people when we're used to compact or pro compact or even good old 5339 if anybody ever thinks about those again. So if you just give us a quick rundown on how you kind of realigned gearing, as it were.
Sure. When we developed Axis, it's an entirely new electronic part of the package. We had the good fortune of being able to redevelop the mechanical side as well. So we've equipped these groups, Red Force and Rival, with X range gearing, which has, in all cases, a wider range of gearing. With 12 speeds, it's got better spacing as well. We rely on a 10-tooth cog, 10-tooth start to the cassette, which allows us to have a really wide range without growing the physical package of the drivetrain inordinately. So it saves on weight. While we always have a little bit wider range, we actually moved some of the range from the crankset to the cassette. So all of these groups rely on super wide range cassettes. With Rival, it's a 1030 cassette or 300% range, or a 1036 cassette or 360% range. Having all that range at the cassette really does make a more pleasant experience, because you have fewer front shifts and a more efficient ride. The less you need to shift in the front, the more efficient your ride is overall. So we really like having a narrower difference between the chainrings. Typically that's 16 or 17 teeth. With our X-range gearing, it's always 13 teeth. But we took that range and put that at a cassette, so the rider can stay on the same chainring for longer. Makes it a simpler, more pleasant ride.
And I guess that also feeds back into the electronic side of Axis, because obviously through the app you've got your different modes that you can use. So you've got compensation mode, which when you're shifting on the front, it's automatically shifting at the back for you to get you in the next best gear. And then there's the kind of full auto mode where you only have to worry about shifting at the back and it changes the front for you. You know, kind of some cool stuff going on there.
Well, you're touching on that, you know, another benefit of having a smaller chainring, a gap between the chainrings, is that when shifting at the front, the rider can get back to their optimum cadence more quickly because the jump isn't so big. So we're typically you'd have, you know, three or four cog shifts or rear shifts to get back to the right cadence. It's generally one cog less with X range gearing. And you know, hey, but that lends itself to electronics particularly well because of the compensating and sequential gearing arrangements that we have via the app. But for fully manual shifting, it's the same thing and even more important, right? It's easier to get to the right cadence.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're talking about the cassette, it's like the gear progression is, you know, that's one of the things I've really enjoyed about it. You know, I'm a big fan that cassettes have got much, much broader. You know, I was a few weeks ago, I was doing a feature on, you know, all the bikes in my garage, and I was looking at one of my old Storks that I used to ride religiously all the time. And, you know, that had pretty much a, you know, 10 speed straight through block on it. But the gear was so incredibly tall. I can't imagine I ever rode it. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, going 11 speed, the 1130 or 1132, but the, say, take the new Rival with the 1030 cassette on the back, you know, you've got the first six gears, there's one tooth jumps, you know, and in the kind of modern era when we've all accepted that having a broader gear range is a nice thing, a good thing. That, to me, it takes me back to that kind of old school feeling where, you know, you're getting this immediacy and progression in the gearing. Was that a real conscientious thought when you were working on ratios?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, we did the arithmetic behind this is way over my head of optimizing the gear jumps based on, you know, empirical data of what sort of power riders are putting out in different gears. And so, and finding where the gear ratio jumps are comfortable, right? And simply put, higher cadence, higher speeds, you really like having the one tooth jumps, and at lower gears, often you're at a lower cadence and wider gear ratio jumps feel okay. And where exactly to put that did take quite a lot of study. And again, that's a bit over my head where they applying our empirical data of power output and how the gear ratio changes feel. So, but adding the 12th cog, we were really able to keep the one tooth jumps wherever we need them, as well as having a super wide range with comfortable jumps on the low end.
I guess we need to just put this all in context, because we've talked about the kind of the price point and the way you've aimed Rival, you know, and I'll apologize to our overseas listeners, but we're talking £1,315 for the two-by group set with everything you need, or £1,100 and change for the one-by version. And then you've got a power meter equipped two-by version at just over £1,500. And in one-by, that's just over £1,300. That's pretty remarkable. So if we talk about the power meter, which you've brought to a price point I don't think we've ever seen before. So, this new power meter, it's an axle-based system with single-sided measurement. A lot of people who it's their first entry into using power, I think that's absolutely fine. But then, the people out there are more used to power. We're talking, Quark D0, dual-sided measurement, and all those metrics that brings. How close is the mathematical estimations that the single-sided system's making when you compare it to like your premium Quark offerings?
Well, in the accuracy of the single-sided measurement is on par with our Spider accuracy of the power it's actually measuring. So you'll get the key is that the user will have a consistent feed of what they're and understanding where their power sits because it's accurate. However, it is measuring only one side. So that really depends on the user, on the rider. And we are hitting a different price point. This is a different product from our Spider-based power meters that measure right and left. This is measuring left only. So you get a consistent feedback on your power output, but it may not be accurate overall because one leg is much stronger than another. And with a single-sided measurement, we don't really have a way of telling that. So one-sided power measurement is not new. There's plenty of other products out there, and they hit a certain price point. And it's an awesome bit of information about your ride, and something that many riders are getting used to having. With indoor training systems that provide some power feedback, and then you go to your bike, which doesn't have that feedback. We want to make sure that the power measurement is available to more riders, and easy to get. You were using pounds with group set prices. If someone has a rival equipped bicycle from a bike brand that didn't come with the integrated power included, the power meter upgrade path is very simple. It's a non-drive side arm with the spindle attached, and it's $150.
The power at that price is insane. And from what I've seen, I haven't seen it in the flesh yet, because I understand they're very, very thin on the ground, but it seems to me to be incredibly user-friendly. The fitting looks relatively simple. Pretty much anybody half competent with a set of hex keys could manage it. And then the actual running of it, there's no sending it away to have the battery replaced or anything. This thing runs off a AAA. Yes, it has to be a lithium battery. Yeah. But it to me, it even just seems it's like the gateway drug into power measurement. It almost seems was that always the way to kind of bring more people to the Quark family, as it were?
Well, yeah, integrated power it's table stakes for a modern bicycle now, or it will be in a couple of years. We really want to offer that. It's always been the plan to make power more accessible. Warren, I'm pretty sure I misspoke, and I'll rely on Danny to correct me here. I think I said $150 a minute ago. I need to say that again. It's $250.
No worries. Either way, that's it's still a remarkable price you know, for power measurement, as it were. You know, I guess I should start rounding things up because we've been talking, nerding out on this new rival for quite a while now. I would say, you know, the remarkable thing with new rival is that it shares the same motors, the same electronics, the same wireless antennas as those premium groups. Do you think, and this might be one for you actually, Paul, do you think being able to bring this tech down to this price could spell the end for mechanical group sets long term? Which I guess is my way of sneakily asking, are you guys working on any mechanical group updates? As it's been a while since Red 22. You know, that was 2013, I think, wasn't it? Are you working on Red 24?
Wow, there's a whole bunch in there. Does this spell the end for mechanical? That's we see that in the comment section of a lot of websites. It's obviously a topic. No, I don't think anytime soon. I think there's a strong group of people who still have a preference for mechanical, but I think that's an ever growing, ever small. And then there's just the price consideration. So those two, I think you'll see mechanical around for a while longer, but I don't think you see from this price point up people investing in new mechanical group sets. I think the future is electronic and hydraulic, and then we'll continue to refine that and improve on it. And I think our main competitors, you know, the writing's on the wall there as well. They seem to be going in the same direction, and the experience is just better. And we want to give that better experience to more people. So it's not that we're anti-mechanical. We're pro a better experience, and we're pro making fewer decisions when you're riding a bike. Mm-hmm. And we think everything we're able to put into an access group set allows you to have a better experience.
That's a good answer to trying to give you a leading question. But so I guess just to finish off, it's the first time I've been able to chat to you guys in over a year, I guess. I guess I should give you feedback and a few, you know, my thoughts on the group. I've put a few hundred miles into Rival Axis now. It feels to me, when you're talking about the mechanics and the speed and the shifting, say compared to Force Axis, which I've got, you know, a couple of years use on, to me it feels absolutely the same, which is pretty remarkable in itself. I really can't tell a difference, and the few people in my kind of inner circle that I've been lucky enough to show them the bike, all actually to a man have tended to agree. I think it looks a bit better than Force. You know, like the new chain set, the kind of the industrial design that's been put together on that new chain set, it's stunning. You know, it looks so integrated and so, you know, slickly designed. You know, I was wondering about, you know, the switch away from the, you know, the clever fluid damper, the Orbit system in the rear mech might have made it a little bit noisier, a bit, you know, might have affected chain management somewhat. And again, I've found it really difficult to tell any difference whatsoever. It still does that great job of you get no chain chatter. You know, your chain stays are going to be free of chips. I've come away sort of far more impressed than I intended to be. So was that always a goal with the group? Was the performance measures that you were hoping to hit?
Yeah, the cost saving measures were all about materials, and in the features we mentioned. So it was bound to really deliver the same ride experience. You know, that it really. The only other difference is that I didn't mention earlier. You know, sometimes we use stamping here with chain rings in this case, and rather than machined finishes, and sometimes stamping actually can feel better than it makes a smoother profile. So machining doesn't necessarily give a better drivetrain feel. One of the things that we've been working on for both Force and Rival is the cassette finish. And dampers for, you mentioned running noise. both groups are benefiting from some changes there that'll make the drivetrain run silent. So that may be part of the you know, head to head experience on a year and a half old force group and a newly delivered rival group. That may account for some of the, you know, rival actually even feels better. That may be part of it.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say certainly the test engineers would be able to point you to, you know, where there's performance differences. We're not going to point you to those differences, but, you know, the goal was to have a product that performed every bit as, you know, the group sets above it. Bikes are really expensive, and if people are still spending a lot of money for this, and we want them to have a great experience, and if we want to promote this new experience, we have to hold up our end of the bargain, which is delivering a well-performing product in all aspects. So certainly was a big part of how do we preserve as much of that experience as possible.
Yeah, and as Paul would say, I haven't used all the words yet, so I want to go back a little bit to the inspiration for this, you know, which is really just riding bikes in this price category, mid-range, let's call it. The frame is virtually the same as the Premier frame. The wheel set is awesome. The cockpit is well designed. These bikes in that $3,000 to $4,000 or $3,000 to $5,000 range, those things are most of the bike is very close to the Premier bike. The biggest standout and difference isn't shifting at this point, mechanical versus electronic, and that, you know, these riders are spending a lot of money and the brand is delivering them something that is really close to their Premier bike in the frame, wheel set, tire choice, bar tape, saddle choice. And the biggest delta is in the drivetrain itself. So we want to elevate that mid-range to deliver what really is an expensive bike that is that much closer to what, you know, to what the pinnacle of the market can provide.
Yeah, I can certainly agree with you there. As I think I mentioned before we started recording, the bike that I've been testing in the rival Lexus on, in my write-up on it, I've described it as getting a Ferrari for Ford money. And, you know, I think a big part of that is down to just how slickly the bike performs as a whole. And a huge part of that is rival Lexus.
Yeah.
Right. I think I should thank you guys for your time. I've kept you here for a long old chat, but it's been fascinating, so thanks very much for that. Just quickly like to say to the listeners, hope you've enjoyed this dive into rival Lexus. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and you'll hear from Bike Radio again soon. So goodbye. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, JP.
Thanks, Warren. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you want any more information on what we've been talking about or more news and views on cycling, check out bikeradar.com.